Hi, everybody, and welcome to the February 2016 monthly call. It's a few minutes before the call, of course, and I'm glad a bunch of you are already on, so you can say hello and let us know where you are. Starting from the top of this list, Cheryl, you want to go ahead and tell us who you are, where you are, and anything else that's on your mind in the moment?
Yes, this is Cheryl Kaplan. I'm from Gainesville, Florida. And it's very cold. It doesn't feel like Florida.
All right. Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
And speaking of other traditionally warm places, Joanne, do you want to say hello and tell us where you are and how the weather is there?
This is Joanne Gaines. I'm in the Los Angeles area in Redondo Beach, and I have no idea what the weather is. It's an incredibly warm and sunny and beautiful. I think it's been in the 80s.
That really feels good to hear that. Thank you. Really, I'm not. What did you say?
Brings a smile to my face.
Good. Me too. How about Nancy? Nancy, will you say hello and tell us where you are and how's the weather?
I will. Hello. This is Nancy. I'm in San Francisco. Apparently the home of the 50th Super Bowl. The weather here is absolutely gorgeous. It doesn't feel like San Francisco.
Well, welcome. And Joan, we say hello. Tell us where you are and how's the weather up there?
Hi, I'm Joan. I live in the south of Boston. The weather here has been like cloudy, and 2 days ago, or yesterday in fact, we get more snow, which wasn't as bad as expected, but it's cold, and it's
right.
Snow and ice.
Hang in there.
So I'm hanging in there, but I'm envious of somebody who said in San Francisco how beautiful it is.
Well, try to enjoy their pleasure. Maybe we can have sunny solidarity with them, okay?
Yeah, we're okay.
All right, thanks. Sounds good. Speaking of sunny, hi, Gia. Want to say hello and tell us where you are?
Hi, Dan. Hi, everybody. This is Gia. I live in San Diego, California, and it's very sunny today. It was actually a little bit colder the days before. Today, I think it was 86 degrees. So it's not too bad, but sudden, you know, change in temperature can affect, I don't know, your throat, your immune system suddenly. But I can't complain. It's still good. Hope everybody's doing well. Thank you.
Sounds good. Thanks, Gia. And Seta, I know you might be in the midst of a crowd. You had a lot going on tonight. Do you have time to say hello?
Hi, we do. There's only one of us left. Kathy's still here. Everybody else just left because they said they had enough. It was a long meeting. There was tons on the agenda, and they were tired.
Okay.
Anyway,
All right. In
Chicago, it's very cold, but we don't mind because we have blankets and heat, and I like it.
Okay, wonderful.
The alcohol, yes.
I just need to say
that. The alcohol helps. Whatever you have to do, whatever you
yes.
can do. Good. Welcome aboard. Okay. Well, thank you. And it's the top of the hour, so I'm going to say welcome one and all to the February 2016 Peace Alliance Monthly Action Call. I'm so glad that you all could join us tonight. I want to welcome any student Peace Alliance folks who might be on the call for their first or second time. It's great to have you with us. On the agenda for the next hour, in a few minutes, I'll introduce our special guest, Hawa Tassat, and he will share, and then we'll have a chance for discussion with him. And after that, we'll have a few announcements. We'll hear about a few grassroots victories, and then we'll have coaching on the February Monthly Action. The February Monthly Action is to bring your Senate advocacy for the Youth Promise Act to the next level. And I see Hawa has joined us in the green room. Let me bring him into the main room. Okay. Done. I'm using the dashboard while I'm talking. So bringing our advocacy for the Youth Promise Act to the next level in the Senate. I want to remind you, when you listen to our special guest tonight, I hope you'll be listening for that little inspiration, those pieces of information that fire you up a little bit. that might help you to generate some powerful action, possibly when you take this February monthly action that we'll be talking about later in the call. We'll be looking at that February action sheet in about 30 minutes, so please have that available. If you don't have it yet, you can download the action sheet from the monthly action page on our website. Before I introduce Hawa Kathat, let me tell him a little bit about the folks who are on the call tonight. Hawa, many of the folks on this call have been actively developing relationships with peace builders in their communities to learn about and support their work, and also with professional media to publicize this important peace building work, and with their members of the U.S. Congress to change federal policy to help this peace building work to proliferate. These are folks like Cheryl Kaplan in Gainesville, Florida, who has persuaded her Tea Party Republican member of Congress to not only meet with the local Juvenile Justice Council to hear from folks who work directly with teenagers, and not only to co-sponsor the Youth Promise Act to reduce the incarceration of American youth, but also to create a special order in Congress to discuss this important act on the floor of the House of Representatives. And that special order is coming up in the next few months. So this is the kind of commitment level of folks on this call. Now let me tell them a little bit about you. Those of you on the call who attended the conference here in October and attended the Friday night events there have seen and heard some of the fruits of Hawa's work. We were honored and thrilled to host a tremendously powerful performance and presentation of song and spoken word poetry from two of the teenage participants in a program called Fly By Light, which is a program of an organization called One Common Unity, which Hawa co-founded and now directs. Hawa Kathat is an accomplished artist, musician, and poet in his own right, as well as a yoga teacher and community organizer. He has trained thousands of teachers in the principles of peace education in this country and abroad. He co-founded and directed an arts-based interfaith peace and conflict resolution project to India, Kashmir, and Pakistan known as Shanti Salam. This 8-week tour was a huge success, engaging young people across the border in dialogue about how to peacefully transform hostility between Muslims and Hindus living in the neighboring nations. Here in Washington, D.C., he has directed the Peaceable Schools program in D.C.'s largest public high school, specifically developing leadership skills of youth and assisting them in dealing with trauma through alternatives to violence, conflict resolution, anger management, stress reduction, deep breathing, and yoga classes. He also developed a unique diversity leadership program helping students celebrate their differences, become aware of their similarities, and grow through their empathy. And in the spring of 2000, after there was a string of school shootings and unceasing youth violence in Washington, D.C., Hawa was part of a small group of young artists and educators who came together determined to shift the paradigm. They wanted to use their music, visual art, and spoken word poetry to inspire youth to put down the guns and choose love over hate. They also wanted to teach youth that artistic expression didn't always have to be negative to sell. The founding members' passion and commitment to youth development and cultural transformation was the impetus for organizing themselves into a formal entity called One Common Unity, which continues to thrive now, 15 years later, with Hawa as its executive director. And we are so delighted to have him with us here this evening. A very warm welcome to you, Hawa, my friend.
Hey, thank you, Dan, so much for inviting me to be on the call. And hello to everybody out there listening. And it's really great, Dan, that you're helping to guide and direct such an important initiative here for the Peace Alliance. So,
thanks, Hawa. Yeah, it's a privilege. It's great to have you with us.
Yeah. So we've been doing, I've had a really amazing opportunity to be working side by side with some of the most gifted facilitators that are working at the intersection of peace education, nonviolence, conflict resolution, and arts empowerment. And specifically, your introduction was really long, and I'm kind of always kind of a little embarrassed about how to follow that up. But what's been really important about the work that we've been doing, I think, that is perhaps of interest to people listening, is that the reason we use arts and music as the medium through which we teach and provide young people with safe spaces to learn about community peace building, to learn about ways to prevent cycles of violence. You know, we've really continuously gone back to music and art as the medium. It's the gateway. It's how we can inspire, we can access, and we can give young people a voice through music and through art. Oftentimes, I mean, I was trained in conflict resolution, and I studied peace and conflict resolution in college, and a lot of it can get really academic, really heady, as some of you know. You know, and sometimes cognitively, when you have somebody that's 12 years old or 14 years old or even 16 years old, they're not quite ready to go so deep into the feelings and into the deep work of nonviolent communication and what that looks like. And some of these young people need a different access point, and especially some of the young people that we're trying to reach and inspire. It's tough to recruit in some of the marginalized schools when there's nothing really exciting and different for them. What's really important to us is that we provide programming that doesn't feel like school, right? And we provide that programming through really innovative, dynamic curriculum that's allowing young people to find their voice and use their voice ultimately to bring awareness to issues in the community that they want to see solved. And so our program right now, our flagship program that Dan was telling you about, Fly By Light, we're currently in a number of schools in Washington, D.C., and it's an after-school program that operates after school, and then through the semester, the young people are having a chance to be visited by guests from the community that are bringing sort of expert views and opinions on different social justice issues. And then the young people use sort of the presentations of these expert guests to help create their own poetry and music and songs to kind of represent their own reflections on what they're learning. That culminates in a showcase at the end of every semester where our young people, they put on a citywide showcase that's typically themed around an issue that they decide is the issue that they want to really bring voice to for that semester. So I think the last semester it was racial profiling and police brutality was the topic and the theme of the last art showcase that the young people put on. And then it also culminates in this really powerful retreat in the summertime. And some of you that have seen our new movie, it's called Fly By Light. It's a new documentary film that just was released in May at the National Geographic Theater in Washington, D.C. And this film, Fly By Light, really gives you a deep inside look at the power of our curriculum. Once these young people are really getting involved, we take them on this journey into nature. And we use nature as another medium, as another tool. It's very different than perhaps a youth venture program where it's recreational. We're not taking young people into the woods or into nature just to go kayaking, but we're really using nature as a tool to allow them to explore and reflect upon their own interconnectedness with the environment, with the world, to give them a space to breathe deep and to process feelings and trauma and habits that might be self-destructive. So the retreat takes place in the summer, and it typically lasts between 5 to 8 days, depending on the summer. And we're actually working right now to create multiple retreats that happen because the number of students has grown so much that we need to create more retreats in the summertime to accommodate all the new young people in our program. So the retreat is a chance for a deep dive into rites of passage work, a deep dive into giving young people that opportunity to explore to explore life out of the city, which is really important. For a lot of us on this call, you might remember having an awesome opportunity to travel somewhere beautiful, to spend a week away from your community or your neighborhood. And think about how impactful that was in your life. There's so many young people in our program and so many young people around this country that never even get to leave the city they were born in because of financial constraints, you know? And so growing up in the same 20, 30 blocks your whole life, you know, you're already 17, 16, 17 years old, and you've never even gotten to see, you know, the beauty of a sunset over a mountaintop. You know, these are the kinds of experiences that allow for deep cognitive development. It allows for an expansion of consciousness. It allows for a young person to see how big the world really is. And it allows for anyone, whether it's us on this call or whether it's a young person that's never had that experience of travel, gives them a chance to see the world in a new perspective, right? And that's what education is all about. It's about seeing the world with new perspectives and new eyes. And this has got to happen in a way that's not rote, it's not memorization, it's not just regurgitating information, right? It's got to be viscerally connected to the fact that we are living on this planet together. And everybody in this call understands that, but I just want to kind of like emphasize why we use the retreat component as such an important pivotal part of our curriculum. And we really want to be doing more cultural exchanges around the world with our young people, and providing young people from the inner city with opportunities to travel to other parts around the country. We're still a really small nonprofit. We do a lot of great work, but we're super small, grassroots, and we make a lot happen because we're resourceful and we create really dynamic partnerships. One of our biggest goals, and Dan, please let me know around when you want me to type. I think it'll be some time for questions, but one of our biggest goals right now as we continue to expand is right now we're working on creating a national campaign with the movie. And we're looking to take the film to major cities around the country. And we want the film to be a bullhorn to help continue to galvanize and spark this national conversation that needs to happen around alternative education pedagogy and why it's so important, and why it's so important that we're making time in the normal school day to give young people a chance to develop their social and emotional intelligence. So that's one thing. And we also want the film to create space for racial, for healing, for conversations around racial healing, for conversations around positive youth development practices and peace education, and how to really bring more peace education to teachers in schools that need the training so that they can be culturally sensitive to their students. So we're really hoping the film is going to keep us working on driving this national conversation. And then we're also hoping that the film is going to create a lot of increased attention to our work, and we're looking to create a national certification program through One Common Unity to help provide entry-level 50-hour, 100-hour, and 200-hour certification for people that want to have positive youth development as a part of their repertoire in teaching. These are people that are teaching in your Boys and Girls Clubs, your local YMCAs, your local community-based organization, all these people that are facilitating and working with young people, they need more and more skills to be successful. And I really believe we at One Common Unity, we've spent the past 15 years developing this really innovative curriculum that we want to be able to train more youth workers in. And then ultimately, we're looking to one day expand. We're looking to take the fly-by-light model, which is extremely successful right here in Washington, D.C. We're looking in the next 2 to 5 years to really pilot it in a few different cities and see what we can do with fly-by-light in a few other cities, and see if we can create almost a regional network or a national network of youth and educators that are using the arts and using music to inspire a whole new conversation around peace education and peace building around the country, because clearly these young people are going to be the path to creating this new culture of peace that we want to embody.
That's great, Hawa. Thank you. It's so inspiring and powerful. I want to remind folks that if you have a question for Hawa, you can push 1 on your keypad, and that'll look like a raised hand on my end, and we'll call on you. So feel free. And Hawa, I think it's amazing what you've done. I and we at the Peace Alliance are big fans of your work, and I'm very excited to hear that you're thinking in terms of expansion and in terms of certification programs for other teachers that may be interested in learning these skills. Again, folks can press 1 on your keypad if you want to join the conversation. If you have a question, I see hands starting to go up. Nancy, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for your work, first of all, and wondering how the funding component of this works.
Oh, yeah, Nancy, that's a great question. Thank you for asking that. Currently at the moment, we have a fairly diverse revenue stream. We're getting about 50% of our support, about 40% of our support from private foundations and grants. We're getting about 20% of our support from local government grants. We still have not been able to access any federal dollars on the national level, but we have access dollars from the Department of Behavioral Health for the work we do around mental health, and because we do a lot of art therapy and we coin it as music therapy as well with young people, we've been able to leverage that relationship with the Department of Behavioral Health. We also get money from the National Endowment for the Arts through the D.C. Commission of the Arts and Humanities. So that's been a consistent funding source for us for the past 15 years, the Commission of the Arts and Humanities, that is. So about 40% from private foundations, about 20% from local government grants. We get another 20% from individual donors. And this has been a really, really successful part of our work in the past 2 or 3 years. And the film has helped us increase awareness. We have a monthly sustainer program. We have a handful of generous individual donors that really believe in what we do and see what we do and support what we do. And what we're working on doing now is building out a larger fee-for-service component, and we understand that it's really important that we are more sustainable. And so we are really trying to figure out ways to leverage a bigger kind of fee-for-service component that allows us to offer our services at discounted rates to school districts or to schools that really need us and want us in their doors, and really asking for some compensation for the services we're providing. And then we have some residual income that comes in from trainings that we do, from workshops, from fundraisers, from special events. We hold a gala at the end of the year. So those are our primary funding sources at the moment. Our budget, just in transparency, like I said, we're small. We've been around for 15 years. Our operating budget in 2015 was $340,000. So it tells you a few things. One is often I get the word that, wow, it looks like you guys have a multi-million-dollar organization with all that you're doing. I say, that's great. We have a dedicated team of volunteers. We have amazing board members that roll up their sleeves. We have a lot of in-kind donations from local corporations and law firms that do pro bono consulting. So we've been very wise with our resources, and we're very good at creating partnerships, which is what's made us really successful. But our bandwidth has been limited because our budget is so small, and we really have a huge need to increase our capacity by having more people on the ground and full-time at our organization.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. I see a few more hands. There's one from Vanessa. Go ahead, Vanessa.
Hi. Thanks so much for all your work. I think it's really amazing. And I was wondering if this is available to adults of all ages also, or if it might be able to be made available to more people, like families and things like that, and maybe that would be another source of income also.
Oh, thank you, Vanessa. That's a really great question and insight. You know, one thing that we had to do strategically about 5 years ago was really strip ourselves down. We were trying to do too much, and we were spreading ourselves really thin. We used to do a lot more adult retreats. We used to do adults retreats for adults that also kind of acted as fundraisers to support our youth programming. In fact, that was how Fly By Light was born. It's kind of an interesting story. We used to do this retreat every year for adult professionals in D.C., and they would pay a significant amount of money to come and join us for this 3 or 4 day retreat, and that would raise significant resources and revenue that would then fund our youth programming. And I remember I was out there one summer with all the adults enjoying the mountain stream and the mountain air, and it hit me in the back of the head, and I was just really wondering, like, how come the adults get to experience this and the kids don't? The kids need to be out here, not just the adults. And so that was when we kind of decided that we needed to kind of shift that. We stripped down because we didn't really have the, as I said, we're still small. We didn't have the resources to kind of run adult programming and youth programming. So we've only been doing youth programming for the past 4 or 5 years. But we're kind of at a place now where we're starting to reinitiate those conversations. And anybody on the call that might want to assist us and help us, we'd love to start doing Fly By Light retreats and more peace education programming for adults. We do parental engagement with the youth in our program. We do parent workshops. We want to start offering retreats for the parents of our kids, overnight retreats, but we still don't have the resources to do that either.
Hey, thanks, Vanessa. Also on the call is our communications director and executive vice president, Matthew Albrecht. And Matt has a question. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, thanks for being on. Hello, we appreciate all your work and just, you know, everything you're doing. We love it. We love it. We love going out and advocating for, you know, our government at the very least to try to support, and media and just the public in general, to try to support your kind of work more. So thanks for being the work that gets us pumped up to do our work. And just kind of on that front, I'm curious, you know, especially as we go out and we talk about these things to people, if you can kind of paint a picture for us, maybe you have a story to tell of like a kid's transformation or anything that we can go and really kind of help bring this to life for people in a little bit more of a personal way. Maybe too tricky of a question, but if there's anything that comes to mind, love a little more.
Yeah, no, I totally hear you. I think a good way to really, Matt, to bring a real personal touch to what we're talking about is understanding that this work doesn't happen overnight. And you know, there's thousands of students I've worked with in the past 15 years. I used to be a public high school teacher here in D.C. But this one story that just is actually right from the film that I want to bring right back into attention because it's so visceral, and some of you guys that will get a chance to watch the movie, you'll get to really latch on to what I'm saying. Mark, who's in the movie, he has this really resistant, difficult time accepting love, right? Because he's spent so much of his life hunting and searching for love from his family, from the people around him, from his friends, and he wasn't getting it. And so when he came into our program, you know, the embrace that he received from us was overwhelming, and honestly, it scared him and made him really resistant to the work, to opening up. And I think one thing that's really important to acknowledge and understand is that the amount of trust and the amount of time it takes to build these relationships for real transformation to happen. Mark went through our program. He almost dropped out of our program. He almost left the retreat because we were pushing him so hard, and he's getting so frustrated. And Mark was recruited on the street. So Mark was somebody that we got into the program through a street recruitment effort that we were doing. So he wasn't even in school. And so, you know, Mark was somebody that really was starting to break open, but he continued to resist to the point where he came back to D.C. He ended up graduating from our program, but then kind of fell back into the same patterns. So he went through the curriculum. He went through the program. At times, excitedly went through workshops. At times, he was you know, he was one in the corner, like, making funny faces and thinking that it was lame and weird. And in the end, he ended up becoming homeless. He got kicked out of his house. He got expelled from school again. You know, I would like to say that it was a success case, but it wasn't until a couple years later. So Mark spent a few months on the street. We didn't have the capacity as an organization to get him a home, to give him a place to sleep, but we helped move him towards, like, youth shelters. He spent some time there. He was bouncing around. Ultimately, he ended up moving out to West Virginia, where we had the retreat. And ultimately, 2 years later, these really deep lessons, these really small seeds that we had been planting with him for about 9 months, 10 months through our program, they started to really bubble to the surface. And what you, the transformation that you saw in Mark over the course of our program was small. It was really minuscule compared to the transformation that you saw in Mark over the past 4 years, right? So Mark graduated from our program in the end of 2011, which is almost 4.5 years ago. And now Mark today, like, he comes with us to film screenings, and he speaks about how he would be in prison right now or worse. He doesn't even know if he'd be alive right now if it wasn't for the work of One Common Unity and what we did. And I don't want to, I'm not trying to just say that to take credit for what we did. What I'm trying to say is that this work takes time. And a lot of times we felt like failures, like we felt like we weren't getting through to him. We felt like we weren't doing the right things because he was still making those same mistakes. But really what Mark needed was space and time. And getting him out to West Virginia was actually the biggest thing that could have happened in his life, because it took him out of the circles of negativity and the friends and the destructive habits of D.C., and it moved him into a space where he was able to reinvent himself. And now Mark finished his GED. He's working as a carpenter. He's moved back to D.C. since then. He's doing tremendously well. But it wasn't all roses, you know. I think this is the real kind of personal, like, story that we need to understand is real, that we have to be patient, like, we have to be adamant and patient, and understand that this real work of deep transformation is going to take time. And in the meantime, we need the structures in place and the support systems in place to make sure that these young people don't fall through the cracks, right? And that's an institutional problem beyond the scope of what One Common Unity can do. But I can definitely speak to the necessity of planting early, and trusting the process.
Yeah, thank you for that. Totally understood.
Beautiful, Hala. Thank you. Yeah, and part of what that might speak to for folks that are going to turn around in the next half hour or the next few days and do some further Youth Promise Act advocacy is the need for a wraparound system of resources and programs, that it may not be just one program or one process, but you might need a whole community that's looking at a system-wide approach that can really help us in our advocacy. How about one more question? Patrick Smith. Go ahead, Patrick. Welcome.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. Love the work that you're doing. I have one question, and we just recently started up Peace in the South Suburbs advocacy group, and I recently had a visitation to the Cook County Jail. And it kind of bewildered me, because I know most of the times we look at kids from, you know, from teens from 16 to 21. And your experience and just with talking with some of the youth and for those individuals who are stuck in prison for whatever reason, do you feel the numbers should be expanded? 16 to 21 is just the ideal number. But what I'm noticing in this data that I'm retrieving and just looking at and being aware of, it's more like 16 to 25, because between 23 and 25, the youth, the teens, the young adults are just now becoming aware of some of the things that they've done. And now they're listening. And so no longer, you know, we put that status quo on the 16 to 21. but it seems to appear that 20 to 25 are really the years when transformations began. Can you kind of expound upon that and give me your thoughts and ideas?
Yeah, no, I love that. I think that's super insightful. There's a few really important moving pieces that we need to latch onto here. One is, with all the importance being placed on early childhood development, which is essential, no doubt, high school is definitely too late to be trying to recruit and to engage the young people that we want to have in our program voluntarily and by desire. Those young people are already far gone by the time they're 10 or 12.
Right.
And anybody that works in the schools knows that. I mean, if you're in these schools every day, you know that by fifth or sixth grade, decisions have already been made around values, around behavior that needed to be interceded with a lot earlier. However, in the same breath, I think the other multi-pronged necessity is to recognize that what we're seeing is a lack of robust high school programming now, too. So high schools are barren. And the programming in high school is boring. The after-school extracurricular programming, at least in the inner cities that we've been working in, is just not engaging young people on a cultural level that's exciting and that's intuitive and that's around things that are exciting them. So, we can't be losing, because then they get into high school, which is the time where the parents are no longer leaving them after school, right? So the decisions to stay after school have to be, like, desire-based decisions. Otherwise, parents, by the time you're in 9th or 10th grade, they're no longer saying, oh, you have to stay after school for this program, because at that point, parents are going to let them do what they want after school. So without real programming after school and high school, a lot of our young people are just wandering the streets, and that's what happens. Now, the third piece of that, to address your third piece there, Jesse, is that we definitely, and I definitely believe in my heart that, the real change that took place in Mark, it didn't really hit him until 21, 22, right? And even at 22, he's still in the midst of making really big life decisions, and he still has so much development to do. I think that age has to expand to 24, 25, because those are critical years. Because if those wraparound services don't exist, and even if young people are trying to make the right decisions, if there's nowhere to go, if there's no university or college that's going to accept them, if there's nothing they can afford, if they already have a record and they can't get a job, then there's nothing for them. And so there's a spinoff and a pattern to just move back into the same negative cycles and self-destructive habits. And so I think it's essential to increase our understanding of that status quo because I think 21 is way too young to stop serving and stop recognizing that there's still really important life decisions to be made.
Awesome. Thank you for expounding on that. I just come across that and it just really hit me. It was like, okay, wow, that was mind-blowing. Because if you kind of think about it, what you alluded to, the young man, he started at 21, 22. Those are, that transformation is just now beginning to, at least that seed is starting to come up and develop and be cultivated, that 20 to 25. And then about the 25 is like, wow, I get it. I realize. And, life changes for them at that during that time. But the 16 and 21, I mean, we're concentrating on that. But like you said, most of the decisions are pretty much made. And, yes, those are coverts. And, we have things in place if we catch them. Still should be looked at, but that 20 to 25 now is the afterbirth. So it's like, what did we do? And I think you nailed it, and we need to spend a little bit more time on that back end as opposed to the front end, because the front end is already done. it's not too late, but it's already done, and it's doing what it needs to do. But nobody's thinking about the back end for which life begins, for whatever reason, what these young folks have done. And it's a little bit more temporal, and it's a little bit more serious in their mindset, because now they don't have to change. Now what? They want to change. And that's the difference maker.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Thank you.
Hey, wonderful, wonderful. Well, Hala, this has been really great having you with us. I can't tell you enough how grateful I am that you've come and visited with us. And folks that want to connect further with Hala can look him up at One Common Unity. Is there a way to contact you from the website, from the One Common Unity website, Hala?
Yeah, there is. If anybody just wants to email me personally, my first name is spelled H-A-W-A-H. H in the front, H at the back, A-W-A-H, Hala. And just make that at One Common Unity, all one word, O-N-E, common, U-N-I-T-Y .org, and that'll come right to my inbox. I don't know if anybody's in Washington, D.C., we have some film screenings coming up, one at the Anacostia Community Museum, which is part of the Smithsonian. We're doing a screening there this coming Saturday, which is a free community screening and event. You can get information about that from the front page of our website. We have another screening coming up the week after at Busboys and Poets on 14th Street. If you're not in the area and you want to see this film, we can arrange a digital copy sent to you over email link. We just ask for donations for that right now as we're using the film to try to monetize and increase our capacity for youth services. So if you want to try to watch the movie, just email me and we can figure out a way to make that happen too.
Great. Beautiful. Well, as I mentioned, you're welcome to stick with us for the rest of the call if you'd like, but if it's time for you to depart, we certainly understand. I'm sure you've got plenty else on your schedule. We're very thankful and hope you have a beautiful night and beautiful week.
Great. Thank you, everybody. Really appreciate having this opportunity to share my story and our story with all of you.
Great. Okay, what a treasure that was. Tell your friends they can listen to the recording by going to the monthly action page on our website. So moving right along, we're going to go into the announcements section. One of the major announcements that we wanted to talk about has to do with our Teaching Peace in Schools virtual summit and series. And Matthew Albrecht, our Communications Director and Executive Vice President, is going to share a little bit about what's happening with that. Matthew, if you please.
Certainly. I'm happy to share this. I'll be quick since we're a little bit behind. I think most of you probably know about our two-part summit that we had last week on Teaching Peace in Schools, which was just a real success. It was so much fun to see so many people excited by it. We had over 2,000 people registered, a really great turnout live. Lots and lots of folks are listening to the recording, which is still up on our website, by the way, so you can listen to that through the website if you want to register. If you haven't registered, you can register through the link on our homepage. But some really beautiful, powerful conversations. And we're really pumped up that the full 10-week course starts tomorrow night. So if you're all obviously invited to register and attend. We'd love to have you take part in it. And spread the word would be great, too, for any of you who haven't yet. There's still time to share it around. There's a few ways you can do that. You can forward some of the emails we've been sending out, refer people to the homepage of our website, post on Facebook and Twitter, or just tell people about it. It should be really great. It's also had a really phenomenal turnout for the course. So we're looking forward to it. It's a really great offering, I think, for the planet to try to create a real movement and kickstart behind teaching peace in schools. So you're all welcome to participate.
Thank you, Matt. And if anybody has questions about the cost, is trying to make it happen, if you're enthusiastic about it and the cost is getting in the way, please email me and let's talk about it, dan@peacealliance.org. For folks that are passionate about this topic and this work, we really want to make it available. So feel free to contact me and let me know how we can make this work for you. Moving along, our stats for January, as far as some black and white accomplishments, as it were, we've had 4 letters to the editor published, 2 op-eds published, no editorials yet in January, or anything on radio or TV, 2 public presentations, and 3 coalition building meetings, and no congressional visits yet. Hopefully that's going to change soon. Visits to a member of Congress or their staff, and no tabling events yet. So those are the stats in simple terms. And now Lori, our assistant national field director, is with us, and she's going to share a couple of the more more specific personal stories that flesh out what those stats really mean. Lori, will you go ahead and tell us about some of those?
Sure, Dan. Thank you. You know, I'm really excited. This year, which is just beginning, has been so rich with grassroots victories already. I'm so excited to be on this journey with all of you dedicated peace builders across the country. It feels like this year's theme is connecting with the community. And I'm going to share 2 reports from the field. And the first one comes from SETA in Crete, Illinois. Their team had coalition building meetings and gave presentations to 3 different groups in January alone, where they shared the fundamentals of the 5 cornerstones of peace building. And that's not all. In addition to that, they spread the word about the Teaching Peace in Schools Summit and Teleconference Series to a group of 170 teachers, administrators, and principals. The work their team did last month helped to make the countless people aware of these valuable programs. It's like ripples in the pond. Their work is going to continue to spread through the Chicago area and beyond. And then this from Anne in Livonia, Michigan. On February 4th, she met with the founder of Detroit Interfaith Outreach Network, and she reported that people attend meetings and programs at various locations in Detroit area to share information about what they're doing and support one another in their efforts. And plans are progressing for a March program where Anne will speak about the Youth Promise Act and urge people to send emails to their members of Congress and their senators. And they discussed the need for an email blast to be sent by more than 100 people to really get attention. The rabbi also gave Anne the names of several people who mentor youth in Detroit, and she's going to begin contacting them as well. In addition, their team set a goal of meeting with at least the aides or their members of Congress, 3 of them who represent the Detroit area. These actions help connect the folks that are doing the work that would so benefit from the Youth Promise Act to the actions that will help it become a reality. So I'm so grateful to SETA and Anne for sending in those grassroots reporting forums and just letting us know, because it's so inspiring, I hope, to all of you, as it is to me, the great work that they're doing. And there's others out there that I wasn't even able to connect with. I know there's some other great inroads being built into communities around the country, and we'll certainly catch up with more of those later. But that's what great things are happening, Dan.
Thank you, Lori. All right. We love what you all are doing, and it's our pleasure to support you and to share news about it when we can. So next, speaking of taking action, let's review the monthly action sheet. And again, for those of you who haven't looked at it yet or haven't downloaded it, you can get it from the monthly action page on our website, the February monthly action sheet. So I'm going to ask for a couple of volunteers, as I have to do, if I don't get any volunteers, then Lori is willing to be our default volunteer, but we'd love to hear some other voices as well, though we're always glad to hear Lori's. So folks that have the February action sheet in front of you, I would just love to have somebody else read from the top the first few paragraphs. Anybody willing to read aloud for us, go ahead and press 1 on your keypad. If you're willing to take a look at that action sheet and read those first few paragraphs. Oh, great. I see a hand. Let me trace that across. Janice Hollinger. Hello.
Hi, Dan. Hi, everybody.
Greetings. Hi. This is Janice in Chicago, yes?
Yes.
Wonderful, wonderful. Will you go ahead and read from the top of the action sheet for us?
Okay. Do you want me to start with February 2016 action, or go down to making stronger, safer communities?
Start from February 2016 and go down to where it says request.
Educate your senators about the Youth Promise Act with an email and follow-up phone call. Initiate or continue the conversation about what it is and why it matters. Making stronger, safer communities using proven peace-building tools and ending epidemics of youth incarceration and violence is what this action is about. Current active negotiations in the Senate substantially include the YPA. This is an important moment to continue educating your senators about it. You can remind them of how important this issue and this solution are. Maybe they or their staff have questions you can begin or continue to address. Request that they co-sponsor the bill. Emails and phone calls can be very brief. Most important is that you do it.
Perfect.
Should I keep
perfect.
Going,
Thank you.
Or is that fine?
No, that's good right there. Thank you. That's perfect. Thanks. So I want to emphasize that this may be the beginning of a conversation for some of you. If this is the first time you're reaching out to your senators or your Senate staff, for some folks it's a continuation of an ongoing dialogue you may be having with a particular staff member or with somebody in a senator's offices about this particular bill, the Youth Promise Act. So the next thing I want to ask a volunteer for is there anyone who is willing to tell us what their most recent contact with the senator's staff might have been around the Youth Promise Act and what your next contact might look like? So did the staff member raise some questions? Did you tell them that you might check back with them to see if the senator's thoughts or the political landscape had shifted for them? Or has something in the news recently, in the national news or local news, made you even more determined and inspired than you were before to put your senator to work, making our neighborhoods less violent and making our communities more harmonious? So anybody who's willing to share with us a little bit about your process with your Senate staff, what's happened recently, what's happened in the past, will you be starting from scratch, or just a continuation? I'd love to hear an example from somebody about what that conversation looks like right now. Anyone willing to share that? Or we can ask Lori, because Lori agreed to do it if nobody else raised their hand. Lori, why don't you tell us about it?
Well, I was really excited about this because the other day I was calling my senator's office because I found out that our Alaska Senator Murkowski had a hold on the JJDPA bill. And I know this isn't about the YPA, what you ask about, but it goes to establishing a relationship with your senatorial staff. And when I picked up the phone, I knew the guy I needed to talk to. I knew the guy that knew that bill frontwards and backwards. And when I called, he knew me too because I was just in Washington, D.C. visiting with him with another member of my action team. And he took my call and was able to explain the situation to me really well and in a way that it felt so wonderful that we had a relationship like that. So that's what I have to share.
Great. Just not to put you on the spot, but do you have a sense of what your next communication might be like if you call? Are you going to ask for that person? And what will be your strategy? Any ideas about that?
I definitely will ask for this person, Nathan, on Senator Murkowski's staff, because you know it was wonderful that we got to meet with our senator in person, but this is the guy that gets down to the nitty-gritty on the bills and looks for little things and has the great questions to ask and things that actually help us, you know, understand the bills better. So the next conversation I'm going to have is like, okay, let's get this Youth Promise Act passed and, you know, how can we get the senator to co-sponsor it in the Senate?
Great. How can we get him to do it? One thing that could be a good suggestion if he's not sure where the senator stands or he's kind of in between, you could ask him to find out, you know, what does the senator need to know or what might he need to hear from constituents in order to take him to the next level. You know, this is, as we mentioned in the action sheet, the Youth Promise Act may be included in a major piece of legislation coming up So part of what's important right now in these weeks is just to keep this conversation alive. I want to keep this idea of wraparound community-based programs on the senator's minds so that when it crosses their desk in the form of, potentially in the form of another bill, inside another bill, they say, oh yeah, I've had some constituent conversation around this. This is something that my staff has been talking about. We've done a little bit of due diligence. So you're really doing powerful work by keeping it on their minds and stimulating their conversations about it. Great. Thank you, Lori. Thank you. And I see other hands going up, but we've got to move to the next phase. I appreciate that there are folks that are willing to share, but not this time, I guess. Feel free to drop me a note if you have strategy questions going on with your senator, something that you want to think through or talk through with me or with Lori. You're always welcome to drop us a line, dan@peacealliance.org, lori@peacealliance.org. But next we're going to move ahead into a laser talk. I've got a brand new laser talk. And what we're going to do is share a laser talk and then have a closing quote. And right after this call, I would encourage folks to consider taking the first part of this action right away. While some of these ideas and inspirations are relatively fresh, go ahead, send that email to your senators, drop them a note, and put in your calendar when exactly you plan to make a follow-up call. Just pen it in there, and then please let us know how it goes. The action sheet should have all the guidance that you'll need if this is new for you. And again, Lori and I are totally available if you have any questions. So here's how a laser talk works. A laser talk is an opportunity to get some concepts around this issue sort of deep into your mind, into your heart, into your bones, as we like to say. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to share about five sentences having to do with the Youth Promise Act and solutions to youth incarceration. I'm going to start with something like, the U.S. leads the world in youth incarceration. Okay, and then I'm going to share several other statements. And then I'm going to go back to the beginning, and I'll say it again, but this time I'll leave some blanks. I'll ask you to fill in the blanks. So right now I'm gonna open up all the lines so that we can demonstrate this. Okay, everyone is now unmuted. So if you have a dog barking in your house, I might ask you to mute your own phone, or if you're clanging pots and pans, maybe mute your own phone. From the start, I would say the U.S. leads the world in youth incarceration, and then I would say a bunch of other stuff. So then I'll go back to the top, and I'll say, the U.S. leads the world in what? And you would all shout out?
Youth incarceration.
You got it. And then I would continue on through the talk. And then the third time, I will go back to the top, and I'll do a similar thing, but I'll ask you to just think the answer. So just quietly to yourself, I'll say, the U.S. leads the world in what? Just think the answer. Perfect. And I'll say, it leads the world in youth incarceration. So when you just think the answer silently, it gives your mind a chance to search for that idea, and it really helps it to get more ingrained. Okay? So here we go. From the top. The U.S. leads the world. First, I'm just going to share it. The U.S. leads the world in youth incarceration. We incarcerate more juveniles per capita than the next 12 industrialized nations combined. The Youth Promise Act will promote proven best practices to change this vile statistic. Over the past 15 years, Connecticut has developed an array of new community-based programs for troubled youth. Its overall spending on juvenile justice has not increased. Among youth 15 and under, total arrests fell 48%, and serious violent crime arrests fell 51%. Please champion the Youth Promise Act in the Senate to help all our children succeed. Okay, there it is. Now, let's give it a go. I'm going to ask you to fill in the blanks. The U.S. leads the world in what?
Youth incarceration.
Great. We incarcerate more juveniles per capita than what?
The next 12
industrialized countries combined.
Beautiful. The next 12 industrialized nations combined, yes. The Youth Promise Act will promote what to change this vile statistic? What kind of practices?
Best practices.
Proven best practices.
Yes, proven best practices. And those of you who have been with us for a while might think of community-based, proven efficient, cost-effective, those are all wonderful things to say as well. Over the past 15 years, what's the state we're talking about today? There's a state we're using as an example.
Connecticut.
Over the past 15 years, Connecticut has developed an array of new, what kind of programs, based where?
Community. Youth intervention.
They are, yes, they are that. And I'm looking for community-based programs, yes, for troubled youth. Yes. Their overall spending on juvenile justice, what happened?
It did not increase.
The overall spending on juvenile justice has not increased. And among youth age 15 and under, what happened to total arrests? What happened to the amount of total arrests?
It
went reduced 40%. Good stuff. The total arrests fell 48%. And serious violent crime arrests fell how much?
50%.
51%. Pretty impressive.
Yes. Very impressive. Please champion, what bill are we talking about? We're talking about a bill here. Please champion what?
Youth Promise Act.
Yes, and where? Which House of Congress are we looking to champion it in?
In the Senate.
Yes, to help all our children succeed. Okay, wonderful. So let's go through it one more time, and I'll ask you to just think the answer to yourself, to keep it in your brain. Okay, the U.S. leads the world in what? Just think the answer. The U.S. leads the world in youth incarceration. We incarcerate more juveniles per capita than whom? We incarcerate more juveniles per capita than the next 12 industrialized nations combined. The Youth Promise Act will promote what to change this vile statistic? What will it promote? It will promote proven best practices to change this. Over the past 15 years, Connecticut has developed an array of what kind of programs? Community-based programs for troubled youth. Just think the answer now. It's overall spending on juvenile justice. What happened during this time? Just think the answer. Overall spending has not increased, even with this array of new programs. Among youth 15 and under, total arrests fell how much? Total arrests fell 48%, and serious violent crime arrests fell how much? 51% drop in serious violent crime. And what are we asking? What's our request? Our request is please champion the Youth Promise Act in the Senate to help all our children succeed. Okay. Rockin'. So good. Thank you. And again, we'd love for you to take this action right away, at least the first part of it. And now Lori's going to share a closing quote with us. And after that, we can all say goodnight. And I hope many of you will join us tomorrow night for the first session of the Teaching Peace in Schools course. And you can sign up for that on the homepage of the website. Lori, you got a closing quote for us?
I do. This quote comes from J.K. Rowling. We do not need magic to transform our world. We carry all of the power we need inside ourselves already.
I'm breathing that in. Thank you. Such a pleasure to be here with all you powerful, magical people. And I wish you a wonderful evening and a wonderful week. And we're here if we can be of any help in your terrific work. And go forth and prosper.
Thanks, Dan.
Good night. Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Good night.
Good night, all.